Hello and welcome to the Inner Take podcast. My name is Ramon Gardella and I'm your host. The Inner Take is a podcast for musicians, a space to talk about what happens inside us when we make music, the thoughts and feelings that shape how we play. I will share my experience as a musician, what I've learned along the way, and I will talk to other musicians about their journey. This podcast is not about technique, it's about what happens inside us when we make music. So, if you are a musician, stay right there. Welcome to The Inner Take. Let's begin. Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of The Inner Take podcast. Today I'm not alone and I'm joined by Patricia Pinheiro. She's an oboe player from Portugal, currently based in Germany. But playing the oboe is only one of the many things she does. She has been involved in different projects with several ensembles and orchestras, and she has a special interest in interdisciplinary projects. She's also the artistic director of a project in Portugal called A Mesa, which concerns and connects experimental music with rural communities. How cool is that? I want to hear more about her and her work, so let's see what she has to tell us. Hello, Patricia. Welcome to the Inner Take podcast. Thank you for being here. How are you doing today?
Hi, thank you for having me here. I'm doing great. A bit tired from a symphonic week, but I'm really excited to talk with you. And you?
Always very busy. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Also doing an orchestra project this week. And Patricia, your story, when I read the things you sent to me, your story with music is so powerful. And it's not only with music, but your life story is so powerful, and how music is involved with your life and the decisions you made. It's really a great story. And I want to start talking to you, if you can tell us, how did you start with music? Because I know you told me that this was not the thing you wanted to do, but it happened somehow. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, so I think it's quite funny because when I see also writing to you, I was like, you know, having this kind of a overview about my last 20 years, 28 years of life. And I was also like, wow, okay, there's so many different phases. And to the opposite of like a lot of musicians, I didn't grow in a family with musicians. I had an uncle that was a musician, but that died before I was born, so I never met him. But I got one of his instruments, and I lived in a small town next to the sea in Portugal. And my mom, when I was about to do 5 years, she had to change her job. So she went to this new city and she was like trying to find a school to enroll me. And in this kind of search, all the schools were telling her, no, you know, like the deadline is over. You have to enroll her in a private school. And my mom was really stubborn. So she said, no, I will, you know, continue searching. And then she went through this conservatorium and she asked, like, can I enroll my kid here? And they laughed and they said, you know, actually today is the last day, but she has to do an audition. And my mom was like, no worry, she will do it. And they were like, but, you know, did she prepare at all? And she's like, no, but she will find a way. And like, I think this is like probably a good resume of how my life was. It was like, you know, about doing things in a way that people were not expecting. So then my mom tried to understand what these auditions were about. And they were just about listening and, you know, like they were for kids. But most of the kids were preparing already for more than 1 year because it was a public school. So all the music studies were free. And so the demand was really high. There was like about 300 kids applying to the same year. And my mom was like, no, she will do it. You know, she always had a thing for music. So she took me there. And the truth is that I passed the audition. And then my mom was like, okay, I find oboe, like in Portuguese, oboe. She found the word very funny. but she didn't really knew what oboe was. So she just put me like as a first choice. And it was the instrument. She put also piano and violin, but they put me in oboe. So because there was not a lot of kids interested in oboe. So I remember to have this call that my mom received saying that I entered, and she telling me, and I remember it was like kind of a confusion moment because she could not really explain me what I was going to do. And the truth is that I started the conservatorium, and this is like where the story starts being not so positive, let's say. And so I had, so the conservatorium is 12 years in Portugal. And on my first year, because I was still very small, I played the block flute, you know, like the original flute, so to say. Yeah. And on the second year, I started with this teacher that was a very renowned person in Portugal, let's say. And the truth is that he was not able in any way to deal with kids. And there was already a big history of, let's say, power abuse. And I think because I always had a very strong personality, I was also bringing the worst from him because I was fighting it. Let's say that it was very short time until the relationship with him started being very negative, even as a kid. So we start by, for example, you know, we have these small cups of water where we put the reeds. And it started like by destroying my first reeds or picking the water from the cups and, you know, putting on me. He would, yeah, like verbal abuse the students. And it was a very complicated situation because he was a very clever person and a person that knew how to circulate all the structures. And so every time that we would do a complaint, the complaint would disappear in the system. And a lot of years passed and the relationship started getting worse and worse because, of course, I was also growing. So I started also defending myself from him. I would, you know, verbally defend myself and say that things were wrong. And that text started being more personal and not just a superficial thing, let's say. It's never superficial, but let's put it on these terms and start being very personal attacks about the way I grew up or me being in a single mom household. All of these kind of comments start being part of my daily basis. And I think this was like where life started showing me also other things. I entered at the time a philharmonic band that in Portugal.
But let me get it clear for also for the audience. You started in a conservatoire.
Yeah.
Without knowing or wanting it. So yeah. Your mother says she will go into do it, and it, at this time I would say great confidence yeah. for your mom. I mean this is like amazing what she did. So and then you passed the exam. Mm-hmm. You started playing the oboe. And your first teacher was this guy, you're telling me now.
So the first year was actually with a woman teacher that introduced me to the block flute because I was still very young. But yeah. He was the main teacher. So as okay. soon as I could start with the oboe, I start having lessons with him. But of course, in the first years, it's a very like... So we don't really have individual lessons as like from when you are 11, 12, you have like group yeah. lessons. So all of these... things were being a bit hidden because, of course, as child, you know, like you, as children, you don't really tell everything to your parents. And of course, my yeah. mom didn't have any clue about what was happening. And as kids, you are just going through, you know, you take things as a joke. You think that this is the normal. And then, of course, when I start growing, 11, 12, I start understanding that this was not correct from him. And so... a big fight, let's say, started from my mom's side with the school, from other parents. But as I said, he was kind of a powerful person and yeah. he was always trying to control the wave, let's put it
and you were like 11, 12 or something?
Yes, so in the
okay.
time.
So you were a child. And you know this story for me, because I know you and I know all the things you play and the way you do it and the passion you have for this. And you're going to talk about this soon. But this is a story for me when you say, okay, and then I quit music and then I made something else. Yeah. Because with such a kickoff, such a start, mm-hmm. it's like, wow, it's unbelievable that the person could get it over and make the career you're making now and all the things you're making now. So, tell us more about how were the next steps?
Yeah, so it's quite funny that you say that, because I was sending a message to a friend these last days, and by accident I went to a conversation that was in 2012, so around when I was 14, 15, and I was talking about this teacher, and I was like, you know, I just wanted to hug my small teenager self, because I could, you know, read these things now from the optic of my grown-up, and it was like, wow, like, how did you not give up? And I think here was like when things started changing, like when I was around 12, 13, I have this conductor from the orchestra of the school that told me like, oh, you know what? I think it would be very positive if you have another musical experience outside of school. So he took me to the Philharmonic band. Well, it's like a wind band orchestra. And I start going every week. And so I think that was really like a kind of a changing of the plots, because I start really having fun. And of course, I was very insecure. I was really afraid of making mistakes from all of the things that I was going through with my teacher. But I also start seeing like, oh, actually, this can be fun. You know, like Philharmonic bands in Portugal bring people with 80 years old to kids that are start learning music, and it's all about community, and it's all about, you know, people being together for music. And I think that was like the first step that I was like bringing me a bit of the light of what it could be if I could get out of this situation. And from this situation, basically, I, trying to really resume it, I had a tumor when I was 15, and this tumor was in my ear. So also, with a teacher and so, he really didn't believe that I was sick, but it's quite funny. And for like basically a year, I was missing a lot of classes. And when it was like the moment of deciding if I was getting operated or no, I asked my mom to not be operated, because this tumor was very close to my nerves in my face. So it would mean for sure that I would never play again. And I think it was like on that moment that I really started understanding that music had like a big role in a way. And the funny part is that the tumor disappeared by itself and wow. allowed me to finish my music course. And so it was like, I find when I really see things from outside, it's like a lot of bad coincidence together with a lot of amazing coincidence, you know? Mm. It's like every time I think there's no turnaround, somehow the situation changes for my best interests. And yeah, so then basically I entered university, and I was, again, like really low self-esteem for oboe. I really think that, you know, I was never doing it. And my first teacher there, he really started building this confidence back. He really started being like, Patrice, you know, maybe this is not just a thing that you do your bachelor and you end up here. Maybe, you know, if you change your mindset, things will start changing. And then again, by kind of a happy accident, I saved my first money together with my today's partner, and we came to Berlin. And when we came to Berlin, I was like, oh my God, you know, I want to be here. Like, it's so many things happening, like in Germany, you can be wherever you are, you know, this freedom. And for me, then was like when the light kind of was like on, and I was like, you know, maybe if I get out of Portugal, I can rebuild this sense of identity. Of course, it was not as clear with these words as it is now.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I had this feeling, okay, you know, and what if I try? And at the time, like my dream orchestra, let's say, it was Hessischer Rundfunks. And so I was like, okay, you know, I will apply to Frankfurt without knowing what that meant. It was like, I will apply. And the truth is that I applied and I entered. And it was like, you know, this kind of all of the lies that you were told somehow, you know, that you'll never be able to do it. And I know for a lot of people, it's like they grow following this kind of goal. For me, it was never the goal because no one put the seed on me, you know. So it was quite the first time that I was like, oh, maybe I can dream higher, you know, I can set the bar a bit higher than people put it for me. And so again, it was a story of like, oh, I don't have money to go to Germany. I don't have any way to go to Germany. But I say, I will work my whole summer. I will put the money that I have. I will pack. And I really had an amazing partner and my mom that were like, okay, you know, we are here if something fails, but go, you need to go.
And you can always come back if you need.
You always can come back, you know, you always have your flight paid to come back. And so I came to Germany and again, you know, I was almost at the end of my money. Like the first 3 months, I spent everything and I was like trying to get a job, trying to go by, trying to learn everything. And in the week, and I really remember this, I was like 25 euros on my account. And I was, you know, already eating only like a piece of bread at dinner. And I was like, okay, I will have to do the call this weekend. And on that day, I received a call from the cabinet of the Hochschule saying, you won the Deutschland Stipendium. You can come. We will transfer the money of the last 3 months to your account.
Wow.
And again, you know, it was just like, when I was thinking again about giving up, it came the situation. And of course, I'm saying this with a lot of lightness now, but of course at the time was really scary, you know, like being in a country with 21 years old and not knowing the language, all of this was quite, yeah, it was quite...
challenging and it's a great story. And what I think is that usually, as you said, usually people, they do the opposite. So you started studying, you probably know a little bit of about your instrument. Your teacher tells you, yeah, if you want to study in Germany or if you want to study abroad, these are the options, these are the orchestras. This, so you go for your goal, you know about these things. But in your case, what I'm picturing a girl who started and didn't know exactly why and what and how, and started playing. And this, I'm not following the goal, but I'm kind of escaping. I'm kind of getting out of this sick relationship with the teacher, and I'm coming to Berlin, which is a big city, but I don't know all the possibilities that there are in Berlin. So, like, you were following your dream, but not knowing what your dream was and building it, you know, and following your instinct to say, okay, I want to apply because I want to live here. And then you got the how do you say, stipendium?
The scholarship.
The scholarship, and you know, and then you got into university, and then you got a teacher who built confidence in you. So, what a story!
It's amazing. I think it's like there was always like something inside of me. Like I did ballet, I did theater, I did music. You know, like there was always like this search for creativity. I think that was like the only thing that was very clear for me. But I was always like a very good student, like about everything, like all of the subjects, you know. I was never like someone that you say she will be a musician because of this, or she will be this because of this. It was like, okay, she can be actually anything, but there's nothing that, you know, that she stands for, let's say. And I think on this kind of path it was very easy for me also to be like, okay, I have to put my standards very high, but I cannot stand up, you know. And so all the decisions were a bit like always being made in turn of what I was living somehow in the moment. And there was always like this kind of inner voice that was like, don't give up now. You know, if you stay here, maybe you'll see what is coming. And I still have it. It's like every time a situation is coming, I'm like, just hold a bit. You know, you might surprise yourself. And I think it was that what happened, you know, like coming and then be completely in panic about having to go and be like, no, you know, this story, maybe, you know, it will show you something.
And talking about the inner voice, because I also talked a lot about this, how do you talk to yourself?
Yeah.
Especially musician artists, when you work alone, that you compare the whole time that you're not enough, that you're always playing for someone else to get an approval. But how did you get to tell yourself, don't give up, there is maybe something more, stay there with your history? And not, you know, for me, it's like if you lived the things you lived, it's like the voice would be very, with much more fear than what you said to yourself. And I think, and in my opinion, I don't know, this has to do, or I don't know, how do you relate this with your mom, with the confidence your mom had in you when she appointed you in a place and she said, she's going to do it. She can do it, you know. And not this thing to, no, this is new, she can't. And then you, I can't. How can I play the oboe if I don't know it? And then the teacher, with all the abuse when you were 11, 12. So, you know, how could you construct, how could you build your inner voice?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the resilience somehow, you know. It's not about the oboe. And I think, and we probably will get also there, but I think when you start seeing life as like something that is like intertwined with music, you know, because it, of course, it took me a lot of years, and I would say maybe only like 5 years ago that I start understanding that what I do is not who I am. And I think this is also very important, you know, to separate. But of course, like when you have a story of like abuse or of situations, and for me it was not only on the oboe side, but I also had in my familiar history and everything, you start also understanding that the strength that you have is not something that is related with the outside, you know. It's really something that it grows inside of you. And even I don't know, I can say I had a very negative inner voice. My inner voice was really like, you can't do it, you are not good enough for this. But I think I start connecting the dots very, very early. I start understanding, okay, but you know, if this was not meant to be in a way, then why would you meet all of these people in the right moment that, you know, would be there, from the conductor to even to my partner, that's like one of the best people to make music with. And, you know, like to meet all of these people that on the right moment, on the verge of giving up, were like, no, give me your hand and we are doing this together, you know. And I think my head start putting these dots very, very fast together and be like, okay, you know, just hold. Maybe your head is telling you a lie, you know. And also to do this distinction, like your head, of course, is telling you from a point of fear, you know, but then I start realizing, okay, when I don't have fear, what are the kind of things that I dream about, you know? And now, of course, with the years now, I really can do this exercise that is like to take decisions, but to put the Patricia with fear in a waiting room. As I tell my friends, like the Patricia with fear, she can wait there, you know, she has a ticket and she will have her turn. But now if I take her out of the room, what is the decision that I'm going to make? And then I can invite her, you know, and she will tell me maybe the things that I have to take care about or that I have to think about, but they don't belong to the decision, you know?
Yeah, this is a great exercise. I also did, when I had this panic or performance anxiety, I also did an exercise to leave all the to leave this voice and to said, so you wait outside, I'm closing the door and I'm playing the concert for the people who came.
Yeah.
So and I leave you outside this. This is not for you. And really to imagine to close the door. And it's the same to say, okay, Patricia with fear, wait it outside.
Yeah.
It's so strong and it's so nice. Well, tell me about the moment you decided to step away from music.
So I think this is like from Germany, let's say. I basically did my master, and the truth is when I entered my master, I was feeling great, you know, I was being very supported, but then the situation again changed And unfortunately, the relationship with my teacher transformed in a very negative way.
How old were you then?
How old? So I was 21 when I came to Germany.
Okay.
And yeah, it was... So my last year of master was together with Corona, what was great.
Yeah.
And yeah, so basically it was like a point where my relationship also with my teacher was not positive. And it was again a moment that I was like, okay, so I escaped this situation, you know, I rebuild myself and then I come to a foreign country again to basically live the same thing. Why? And... here I also have really to thanks to people like, for example, one of the oldists from Essischer Rundfunks that took me and was like, you know, giving me lessons to, again, the right people were there, you know, at the right time to be like, don't give up. And then COVID came and I was basically forced to end my master even without lessons. And I did my master while working three jobs, and I basically entered a depression right after I did my master. You know, it was everything pushed. My grandpa died some weeks before my master. He was like my paternal role in my family, and so a lot of things followed from this moment, and I got quite sick after ending my recital. And then I start understanding like how much trauma I was, you know, holding all of these years in my relationship with the instrument, how I learned just to push forward, you know, like, oh, I have to do this thing. I am, you know, privileged. I'm taking a master and a bachelor in a family where no one went to university, you know, all of this weight was on my back. So I think when I did it, when I played my master, that I finished with an incredible grade and everything was very beautiful from outside, you know. But then I had to be there in a point where everything was closed. I got fired from my jobs. I didn't have income. I had finished my master. I couldn't do auditions. There was nothing, you know. It was just me in Germany, kind of alone. And then I was like, and now? What is happening, you know, now? And in that time, I met Daniela Tessman. She's teacher in Mainz. And she was like, I would really want to have you here. Come for a lesson. And in our first conversation, she told me, okay, you know what? I think you would be able to enter concert exam even if you are very young. But I think you have a lot of things that you have to deal first. Like, I think you really have, you know, to talk with someone. And she took me really on her arm, like more than a teacher, you know, like really as a friend. And she was like, okay, you know, we are doing this together. I will recommend you someone. And I was like, I don't have money, you know, even to live. So how can I, you know, afford therapy or coachings or...
Yeah.
And then it was again, you know, when life was like, okay... There was a COVID fund that, you know, that I was actually able to receive of like, I remember it was like about 1,000 euros. And I said to myself, so I will pick this money, I'll put it apart, and I will take all of this money to talk with someone. You know, I cannot do this anymore. And during this year, basically, I took a foot apart from music. I start doing coaching. I start talking with someone about all of these years, you know, of abuse and of my relationship in music. And I start having a very normal job in a warehouse, working with hundreds of people, with clothes and nothing to do with music. But on the end of every day, I was still going to home or either to the university where my partner studied to practice. So after 8-hour shift, I was still going, you know, to practice. And then I start realizing like, you know, my relationship with music is not about achieving any goal. You know, it's just about me wanting to do this. And a lot of things here happened. Then I entered concert exam after almost 1 year. I had to play on the streets. Again, it was a lot of like small situations, you know, like to earn money just to survive. But I really had to give like this step back while everyone was like, now should be your moment, you know, now that you finish a master with 23 years old, you know, like you're so young, you should be winning auditions, you should be doing that and that. And then I'm like, I disappear from the map. One year, you know, just going out.
So you stepped out, but you keep practicing. So, you know, in a way, what I feel is like, again, the things that you, there is this prototype of person who studies and follows and make the auditions and win the position or started playing. And you didn't have there when you stepped out, I'm a failure. I'm doing everything wrong. You know, I have the feeling you adapt to the situation. As the situation was, I need to talk to someone. I need to step out. I need to clear my head. I need to, but I still want to practice, still practicing, still in contact with my instrument. So I don't know how do you see it now, but it's such a powerful thing to do because it requires for me so like a clarity when you say I'm going to step out in order to afterwards being like more powerful in what I do. And this is exactly what happened. So what happened after you return to the normal musical lifestyle?
Yeah, so the thing is that I didn't know if I was going to return first, you know.
No.
Then, of course, like I did auditions for the concert exam because the teacher, you know, Daniela was really like also one of the people that was like supporting me. And the truth is that I didn't enter the first time, you know, even with someone telling me like, you can do it. But I didn't because my confidence, everything was not working, you know. And I think when I tried the first time, then it was really when I realized, okay, there's really a lot of things here that don't work. And this was really like a process of 1.5 year, let's say. Then I entered the concert exam, still working and outside of music. And of course, it's not bearable to be in such a level of studies, you know, and working in a warehouse 8 hours per day. But that was my reality. And I also start seeing, okay, you know, maybe this is not the relationship that I want for me with music. Maybe I don't want to be, you know, playing Mozart every day. Maybe I don't want to be being accountable by the standards of the people that I used to admire and that I still admire, but you know, maybe my standards are others. Because if I'm working 8 hours per day and at the end of the day, what I want is like, you know, to have fun playing or, you know, to play some Bach just for fun or to play a jazz suite just for fun, why am I forcing myself to go to a path, like through a path that is being rotten for me, you know? And I think there was really the moment that I start realizing like maybe I'm doing the wrong questions, maybe this is not about me fitting a system that already exists, maybe this is about me creating a system that exists for me. And so even after 1 year trying to enter concert exam, after 2-3 months of being concert exam, I gave up against all of the expectations. And I think it was probably the most freeing thing I did in my life, because of course I was so scared. The person that gave me the hand, you know, I was telling her like, I'm sorry, you know, you helped me to come here, but maybe this is not, I need to discover who am I. And yeah, and I think this was really the moment that opened everything. So in that year, I start doing a production with a Schauspiel in Frankfurt. I did an audition, a random open call that became like 1 year contract. I entered the Bühne Academy in Tonali with also like a video that, you know, like it was my first thing about like, let's be creative. I played what I wanted for the audition. And then I was like, oh my God, I have so much fun with all of this. I have so much fun being free from pressure, you know, even like playing in the streets to earn money, you know, we were playing what we wanted, you know, it's like, so all of these like small steps start showing me, like, of course, like winning an audition, playing at this great level, it's amazing. But first, I need to like what I do. And I think it took me like, yeah, around 2 years before me doing the audition for Ensemble Modern Academy. And so where I really just rebuilt my whole relationship with music, you know. And I think when you're alone and you, like, you have to work, especially like as freelance, and you are not doing the things by the book, there's so much of different types of scarcity, like in a way of like, you feel that everything, you know, will end. You are too late for everything. But the truth was that from these, I start actually playing in orchestras again. I start, you know, putting my level up. I start being invited. I start, you know, doing a lot of things and starting understanding that I didn't have to choose. You know, all of this pressure was being brought by other people that, you know, it was their lives. It was the way that they lived their lives. But I had, you know, I had to give again a step back.
Now, when you say I gave up Konzertexamen,
yeah.
For the people that don't know, Konzertexamen is you studied master in Germany and then you can do another study, which the name is Konzertexamen. So you play, there is like a master another 2 years. So it's not giving up. It's like you change the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if this change of way, it's better for you, better for your health, for your music, for your, you know, for everything. Well, it's not giving up. Otherwise, it's like winning everything, you know. And I did an episode last week talking about making a career and making music, you know. And usually we think that we are concentrated on building a career, you know, and getting on the places, getting positions, getting more concerts. But it always depends on someone else, someone who says, yes, you can, yes, you can't. So yes, you are in, yes, you're out. And when you concentrate, I think, with the things you really want to do, and although these things are for many people near you like crazy, why are you doing this? You should be winning auditions. You're young. You should be. And when you can connect with this, then, as you said, I got invited. I got invited from orchestras. I started playing more. I started playing better concerts because I think you connected with this part of you who was telling you, hey, this is the way. And, you know, in every single interview that I'm making, you are the third. And always the word fun appears. Mm-hmm. To have fun, you know? And to look for it, to say, okay, how can I have fun? And following, of course, all the things you know, you want to play well, you want to practice, you want to make projects, but looking for fun and not fun in a teenager way, you know, I just want to have fun and I don't care. No, there are so many possibilities in music.
Completely.
So which one gives you fun and, of course, connects you with what you want to say?
Yep. And I think for me, like, and I tell this to a lot of friends, like when they tell me, like, you know, I'm going through a life crisis and I need, like, I don't know why I do this. And a lot of times I say it in a way that is almost fun, but it's also serious. That is like, just, you know, do another thing that doesn't have anything to do with your instrument. Because I think we put a lot of pressure in that our career and like that the thing that we love and the way that we do money has to be the same. And first, that's a lie. You know, we can do money with a lot of things. We can survive with a lot of things. And for me, that's like the thing that I established for myself is that if music is not being fun anymore, then I earn money doing another thing.
Yeah.
And that gives me freedom, you know. Because, of course, and the world is changing, you know, like culture is being cut, all of that. But to know inside of myself that music now is not a thing that I give up, it's just the pressure that I put on music as to be my breadwinner. You know, music doesn't have to win the money for myself. Music has to be just something, you know, that I appreciate, that I do. Of course, if they can be together, Super. But it's because I take the pressure out of it that I actually can make music to be my breadwinner, you know? And every time I forget that, normally is when the problem starts. So I always have to be rebuilding that. It's like, no, you know, I have two arms, I have two legs, I'm healthy, I can have a normal work, you know, I can survive. So if I have that as basis, why am I scared? Why am I scared to do the thing that actually gives me fun, you know, and that gives me, you know, joy? And I think a lot of times, because the way that we study, because the way that we work, we take this with so much seriousness, like we think that will be the end of the world if, you know, if we don't win that job or if we don't do that thing. But actually, we are again, you know, we are connecting these two things, that what we are is what we do. And it's not, you know, I am Patricia. I have a lot of goals that are outside of music. You know, I'm a friend of my friends. I love to cook. All of these things are who I am. And then there's this other thing that is what I do. I pick my oboe. Sometimes, you know, I play it with a reed. Sometimes I don't. You know, sometimes I play contemporary music. Sometimes I play orchestral music. But that doesn't say anything about me. The only thing it says is that I'm curious, you know, that I'm open, and it's just that. And I think the whole system tries really that we are so fixed in an identity. That if we don't win an audition, we are losers, you know. If we win an audition, we are everything. But the truth is, you speak with people and they won the auditions, you know, and then they are like, and now what? Because this is a loop, you know.
Because we learned, well, they teach us to be just musicians. So our musician part has to be taken care of, and the only way they teach us is to practice, 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 and practice. But then if you noticed, okay, but I'm a person, I have another goals, I have another wishes, and music is what I do and my profession, then the field is much bigger, you know, and it's not practicing. Of course, the work, you have to do the work, but you can find another intention in all the things
Completely.
you do.
Completely. And the intention itself, you know, makes that the work is way faster. Because when you're, you know, it's like, again, joy, it's a curiosity. It's like when you are curious about your instrument, when you are curious about why you do what you're doing, you actually can get to your goals way faster because you are not losing time, you know, again, meeting expectations. You are using the time to be curious about why is this hand here? Why is my body feeling that? Why today, you know? And when you are in this system of being curious, when you see, and for me, this is really a motto, like when you start seeing creativity as a spectrum, as like, oh, the trees outside, you know, the sky, people around me, everything around you can be creativity. You start understanding yourself as part of creativity. So creativity is not outside of yourself, it's in you, you know, it's just an approach. Like, if it's about being curious, you know.
But you know, I also think we are always, and I think it's also because of the system that we are always waiting for somebody or something to tell us, go for it. Now, it's your turn. And we spend, I mean, I was thinking yesterday, we spend a lot of time talking about this freelance thing or this having a position in an orchestra or a teaching job or something. As a freelance, we are talking a lot about this with people in a position, in a fixed position. And of course, they didn't experience what it's to be a freelance. So all the things they have to say, it's like, no, freelance, no, because you need, you know, if you want to have a kid and so on. And then, okay, so first we are talking with the wrong person. Or it's good to have what they have to say because you like them and you respect them as musicians, but you know, I have to talk with another freelance and say, hey, how are you doing? How are you managing this? And the second thing is that I have always the feeling that, as you said, everything is in you, and you don't have to wait for the green light for anyone. So if you want to do it, you do it. And the best way to do it is like starting and see where fun is, where creativity is, how do you feel, how do you, the things you don't want to do, Of course, when you have so many years in the career and in the music, you start discovering this. And when you're a student, it's difficult. But this is so important to check where is the place where you can practice your creativity. And when you can say, hey, I'm having fun here. And then you see how can you make it work? How can you earn money? How can you ask for concerts, ask for recordings, meet artists and collaborations, you know?
Completely. And I think it's, again, as you said, like, I think, for example, if I want to practice, you know, orchestral excerpts, of course, the right person is to go to someone that, you know, plays orchestral excerpts every day. Of course, you know, you are taking the best from this person, or the best of the knowledge, let's say. But when we are talking about life, like, you know, you ask for, I don't know, motherhood advices to a mom, you know, you ask, like, we have to understand that the spectrum of things that are needed to be a freelance is, and this is not in a qualitative way, but it's way bigger in terms of how diverse it is. You know, you have to do your own taxes, you have to know how to organize money, you have to know how to invest in yourself, all of these things, how to create network. And all of these tools, they are not being taught in school. You know, we don't have any business management kind of master inside of music.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And for me, I think, and I work also with a lot of teenagers about these topics, and I give workshops as well. And I think the first thing that we have to do is, like, what does mean to be a musician? Like, to just put this question. And you'll see, and this is a very funny exercise, because if you give 5 minutes to, like, teenagers or, like, I don't know, 18-year-olds musicians, they will come maybe with, like, 5 words. But then if you start pushing the thread and be like, oh, you know, but if you produce, I don't know, a techno sound, you know, that you go to see in a disco, are you a musician? Ah, yeah, actually, yes. Ah, and if you, you know, the music for elevators, or, you know, the person on television that's, and then you start stretching these words and you start understanding how many jobs are actually inside of what it can be one master in music, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is that the system teaches that the only way of having success is to, and especially I would say in, like, Central Europe, I think it's very different and diverse in other countries. But, like, for example, in my own experience in Portugal, like, there's not orchestras enough. So people think that the success maybe is to have a contract teaching in a good conservatorium, you know? So it always, it's always connected with your reality. But the thing is, like, your reality is also being constructed by your mind of what you think is possible. So we have to teach creativity in the sense that we have to teach students, like, to imagine outside of the walls that are being given to them. Like, okay, with these tools that you have from your instrument, from the knowledge of history, from this and this, what reality can you build? You know, what would be perfect for you? Like, what would you want to do with that? And then it comes the quite funny answers, because most students will not tell you, like, play in an orchestra every day. You know, that's a construct. That's what they are being taught.
Yeah.
A lot of musicians, you know, that will tell you different things. And there is where you can start understanding what their, like, what their talents are in one way, and actually how can they do careers with that talents. And here we start diversifying. And of course, like, I admire so many people that play in orchestra. I do myself love to play in orchestra. I just don't see myself doing that every day, because I have another necessity of what I need from the world. But it is completely okay that someone says, like, I want a fixed income and I want, you know, just to play an orchestra. Like, both things are completely okay. I think we just have to open the window for the thoughts of what do you want to do with music? You know, you can even be a politician, but, you know, with a theme of culture, you can be, you know, it's a
And I think for me, it's always these this intention. So what is your intention?
Yeah.
You know, and then you can see what can you do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you like playing in orchestras, but you don't see yourself like having this position every single day, play the same things and so on. But your intention is to every time you play, you try to connect with music, you try to connect with the environment, and yeah. you try to give the best of yourself. And this is an intention that you could play everything. You played on the streets, you played on new music ensembles, orchestras, everything. And because your intention is to connect yourself with the music, no matter which music.
Yes.
You know, and then you started thinking like this. And then I did a project here and here and here. And then you look at your curriculum.
How does it curriculum? Resume.
And then it's like, okay, where was I 2 years ago? And look now, all the things that I did, because my intention is like going to these places where I can connect myself to music. And this is not like, yeah, I really need to play in that orchestra because this orchestra. No, this is... No, I mean, you can search for this, but if the intention is just to play in this orchestra,
yeah.
maybe you get the job, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And then?
Yeah, you know, completely.
What happened then?
Completely. And I think, again, like for me, my intention, it is to connection, like to have this connection with music and also to be my like the best version of myself while doing it, you know? And I discovered that in order for me to be the best oboist, best musician, best person that I can be for myself, I need to allow myself to experiment. I need to allow myself, you know, to fail, to try different things. And that works for me. That doesn't mean, you know, it works for other people. I know I have a high level of resistance to fear, let's say, of doing decisions that maybe not seem the right ones. But that doesn't have to work for everyone. And that's why it's so important what you say. It's like, but what is your intention? You know, what is, why do you do what you're doing? Like, what person do you want to be while doing it? You know, and then things start coming to help you go towards that goal. It's not the opposite. You know, of course, you can search for things that take you there. But I find that role way harder because... Again, you are trying to control something that you are not living, you know? You have to embody the person that you want to be, you know?
And when you do it, when you connect with yourself, people start feeling it.
Yeah.
And there is a place for this. So let's say there is a place for you and your things and your things, the things you want to say, although you think, no, this is, you know, I always think and I also say, what do you think about yourself that you think, no, this is too weird for the world. No, this is, I like to play this music from my country and to combine with lights and videos and to say some words and recite a poem. No. This is what the world is needing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you connect yourself with this, which is very inspiring for you, then there is a place. There is a place and there is also a market.
Yeah.
You can create it, you know, but nobody's going to tell us, do it. But if you start, you see, okay, I'm connecting with myself. People are, you know, are getting this vibe and I'm getting more calls. I'm getting more concerts. I'm getting better paid than 2-3 years ago, you know, and... It's a win-win situation.
Completely. And I think that has really to do with like, you know, just start small. It doesn't really have to be like, for example, you are starting, you know, like you're doing your podcast. You also probably had the thoughts of like, oh, I have to have that and that and that in order to start this. And the truth is, no, you know, you have to start by maybe talking with someone that you admire and say, oh, do you want to have a conversation? Let's record this, you know? And I hope I'm not oversimplifying, but I think it's a lot of times just like, oh, you want to do this concert? Don't wait for the money. First, create the playlist, you know? Try to understand what are the steps toward that goal. And probably once you start doing it, the opportunity for doing it will come. Maybe sometimes in a very like different way than you expected. You know, no one will like give you the check in the hand without knowing that you have the idea. But if you have the idea and maybe share it with another musician, or, you know, or maybe you talk about it, or maybe like there's, or you post a SoundCloud, a track of something that you want to do, like that thing is leading you to the next person that is leading you to the next conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that's an exercise about being able to show up as yourself, even if you are afraid of judgment. Like, to do this exercise, a lot of times I have this fear, like when I'm playing in orchestras and I'm like, people ask me, so what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm not doing auditions. I'm doing this crazy thing in like rural Portugal, and then I'm doing these other things where, you know, I play the washing clothes stand, and people are like, and I'm like, it's okay, you know, because then they will know, like, oh, you know, maybe she's the crazy person that I have to call for this crazy project. But
of course,
it takes a lot of energy and courage.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay, tell us about this project, Amesa.
Yeah.
How is this about? Because now that you tell me about the time you got in the band, after the traumatic relationship with the teacher, and people, old people, young people playing together, and this community, and bring your music to this. Now I can relate it with this project, but maybe I'm wrong. But
no.
Tell us about this.
Yeah, it's quite funny, because while I was explaining that, I was like, oh, you know, I was also having the kind of thought at the same time. I was like, oh, maybe this is connected to that. So Amesa is like basically my heart project, let's say. So I was 3 years in the Bühne Academy from Tonali in Hamburg. And on the last year of this academy, we can receive a scholarship for a project. So we have to submit our idea of project. And I knew like in my heart that the thing that I wanted to do was connected to Portugal and to the reality in Portugal. And I think for me, one of the biggest problems that I see in Portuguese culture, let's say, like in the way that people are connected to culture, is that they see classic music as a very elitist thing. So it's not for everyone. And so I started thinking, like, how can I make it, you know, more approachable? How can I make contemporary music not so scary? How can I make, you know... And I think for me, like, experimental music, in a way, it's like this kind of interworld where you can be a bit of everything. You know, you can create bridges without taking yourself too serious. So actually, then I start thinking about the Philharmonic band, you know. And one thing that's quite funny about the Philharmonic bands is that the first years, while you are children, you basically are having... So while you are a child, you are basically having education for free from the Philharmonic bands. So they get systems where you can learn the instrument for free, while the older musicians are being paid to teach the young generations. And then you go on these rumarias. So like it's when there's a Saint holiday. So there's a whole day of like celebrations, and the Philharmonic bands play there, so you can earn money by playing in these celebrations. But one thing that for me always stood in my head is like how people open their doors for the Philharmonic bands to enter at like 7 a.m., 8 a.m., 9 a.m., you know, the whole day, for people to go eat, because we walk while playing like kilometers, and people open just their doors and say like, come here. You know, the table is served. And actually, this is like the logo from Amesa. It's like this idea of like, you know, of not having fear and, you know, just opening the door to the unknown. And that's something that stood for me because, you know, my grandma, she didn't go to school. Like she started working very young when she was six. So she doesn't know how to write. But for me, it's something that was very like strong while growing up, was this thing that, you know, she would open always her door to the neighbors to come eat, even, you know, if she would not have for herself, it would be always this thing of like inviting to the conversation. And so I start thinking, okay, you know, people maybe don't come if I invite them for a concert, but if I invite them for a conversation at the table, you know, if I put food at the table and, you know, I just wait for it. So the idea of Amesa is basically to center the creation on these acts of being together at the table. So we put small tables in the center of a small town or a village, and we just wait people to sit. And in the first edition, it was really beautiful. People sat, people ate. We learned so much that we could not learn in books. And this is one of the grounds of the project. It's like, we don't come to a place to teach people, you know. We come to a place to learn from them. And in the process of learning from them, then to give them something back with what we learned. So we were a whole week in this town. We learned a lot about the culture, things that were not even in books. We even talked with the president, like, of the city, and he was telling us, like, oh, I didn't know about these stories. Mm. You know, how do you know that? And we're like, because we listened. And yeah, and we created, like, workshops, for example, for women with silverware for eating, where they could, you know, like, redesign their role in society. It was called, like, a Sunday at the table. But on this Sunday, the women didn't have to cook. So it was like, how does it sound, you know, when women sit at the table instead of cooking for the table?
Yeah, and great idea.
Like, to create all of this. And at the end, we did a small concert where, of course, people, because they met us through the days, they came. And then we ate all together at the end. And it was really beautiful because people were like, wow, I could understand that. You know, when you did the sound with that thing or with that thing, like, I could understand that you were talking about this tradition or you were talking about this. And it was such a beautiful experience. And now we already applied for more money for the next edition. So hopefully the project will continue. Yes.
I wish you all the best. It's
thank you.
It's the idea of, you know, the music that we are always we go to play and to teach and to bring and to give, but actually it's the other way around. So we are going to learn from you, from your culture, and it's like a sharing. It's like I give you, you give me, and it's a great point to for a project. I think it's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was your idea. You're the artistic director.
Yeah.
Amazing. What a nice chat. What's a nice talk.
Thank you.
I loved it. Thank you for being here. Thank you for talking to the people. And you know, I'm seeing all the things I'm talking on in the episodes alone about being a musician, being a person, connecting with music, connecting with career, and you know, this feeling that we are alone somehow thinking this. And then you talk to people, talk to colleagues, and then you realize, no, we are all experience the same things, but there are maybe not so many rooms to talk about it, you know. And then it's great. I thank you. Thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, and I thank you for opening the room, you know. Like, it's amazing to have an open room as well.
Thank you. Yeah. I will leave Patricia's webpage and Amesa, I will leave in the show notes for people to take a look and contact you if they want to talk to you or to say thanks for the podcast, thanks for the chat.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Patricia.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you everyone for listening. And feel free to do any question. I always like to
talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ciao, ciao.
Bye. If something in this episode resonated with you, I invite you to take a look at Mental Notes. The link is in the description. There you'll find texts, videos, and short resources that can help you explore these ideas further, and most importantly, space to talk about them. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. See you next time. Take care of yourself. Bye.